And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the Hurling Show on a Thursday. It's Conal, it's Mikey, and it's Damien. How's it going, lads?
Very well, Willie.
How you doing?
How you doing, lads?
Les, I was listening to Monday's show. Obviously, I became a father last Friday, so I was out on Monday, and it was a very good show. So I don't know how happy I was about how well the show went, but that's another story. But I was listening about the bit of analysis that JJ did on Patrick Horgan, and a little bit critical about how he came on, and his body language was all over the place. He came on in the 57th minute, and Kilkenny were 20 points to 13 up. Now, this is an all-star, someone who's, you know, one of the best forwards in the game on his day now, hasn't been performing great, and he gets on for 13 minutes when his team is well beaten. I don't know if it's the sub in me for a couple of years that was there. I have a little bit of sympathy on Patrick Horgan, Conal, that... Like, no, not everybody can come on and be the perfect leader in that situation. Like, some players are just human beings and might find it hard to shake off that disappointment.
Yeah, no, it is. I can understand where Patrick Horgan is coming from. I think I was nearly in the last couple of years of my football career, I was kind of in and out of the team. And, you know, I was always nearly guaranteed to play up, coming up to that for years. And I never had a problem, you know, even getting taken off in a game. I was always questioning and, you know... Got to the stage where, like, you know, why are you taking me off? Sure, we're winning or we're not winning. I need to be on the field. Or, you know, you had that in your head. But I think when you get to the stage then where you're not used to being a sub, it's very difficult to get used to it.
Very difficult.
You feel, you know, you're good enough to be playing. You know, you're still in your prime or whatever, 26, 27, 28. You should be playing and you're good enough to play. And everyone in the whole country thinks you should be playing. You know, and you get that mentality into your head. It's very hard to shake it. But what I would say is it's hugely important to have a good manager around it. You know, you need to be communicated to well to let you know why you're not playing. You know, you are really important to the team. But just at this time, you know, your form isn't good. So maybe it's time just to maybe just take a rest for this weekend and get your head right for the next thing, because you need to perform every time. And on the other side, I think it's good for a squad too to see that a manager can deal with that, and also that if you're one of the top players and you're not playing well, you're going to be dropped. You know, it's like the Jim Gavin thing now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think any of them players really would mind, you know, not really start, because he would kind of put a different spin on it, saying, "Oh, we need our best team to finish." You know, so there's loads of different spins you can put on. I think it's all about how you manage it. And okay, maybe Patrick Horgan's body language wasn't great in the weekend, maybe coming on and. But, you know, I think it needs to be managed probably a little bit better than it maybe it is. I don't know.
It's going from that point of always being a starter, and that was always my point. All up through my career, I was a starter. And then when you go from that to being a sub, it's a very hard dynamic. You've tasted what a match day is all about. And then to have to be put back into this scenario where, you know, you're with fellas who don't seem to even be disappointed that they're on the bench. You know what I mean? They're like, they've been there so often.
Here comes Willie's hatred of subs again.
But that is it. I do hate, like, there's a lot of subs that really hate it, because you are coming from a situation where you're livid and you have a fella beside you who's cheering every score like a supporter. And I'm like, come on, are you not even care about getting on here?
It's something that's bred into you from an early age if you're used to being substituted. I would have been used to being substituted. And I remember one county final I was left off because I missed the semi-final because I went to see Leicester City play. First time I ever went to see Leicester City play, and I was under 16 or something. I got dropped for the final. I had great attitude though. I came on at half time, scored the winning goal. It was from about 3.5 inches. It was a nippy corner forward. But the elite players, if you're playing for your county, if you're Patrick Horgan, man's probably never been a sub in his life.
Well, that's it. It's not easy.
It's not easy. Easy for some of us.
What about you, Damien?
Colin, it's a hard one.
What are you drinking there?
Or is that a dramatic pause?
No, I know what's after happening down in Cork. Kingston feels he needs to get more out of Patrick Horgan, right? Patrick Horgan, the last day, his body language wasn't good. There was one particular clip where he just let Pory Walsh out to clear a ball and never even attempted to make a challenge, right? I think Kingston dropped him. He wants to get more out of him in his work rate performance. He, in my opinion, Patrick Horgan is up there with one of the best stick hurlers, touch, first touch, everything, all that sort of stuff, first class, but he wants to up his work rate. I said Patrick Horgan was very disappointed to be dropped for the game. I'd say he wants to definitely be playing against the likes of the Kilkenny down in Nolan Park and putting in a performance, you know. And but I'd say with the Sickner, I'd say he knows himself that there isn't five better forwards in the Cork setup that are as good as him, and to be dropped was, you know. But the only thing is, he needs to up it. I said this maybe about 2 or 3 weeks ago, that I feel an awful lot of the Cork marquee players need to up their performance. But his body language did let him down. But
would you forgive him for that though, Damien? His body language being a little bit off.
Being honest with you, I wouldn't, Colin, because he's an elite player. He's representing the people of Cork, right? And yeah, if you have a Barney being dropped or not being started or whatever else, right, take it out with the management, whatever, after the session or after the game, whatever. But when you're on your county jersey, you're representing so many people. So yeah, I would have an issue with it. I agree with Conal. I think he needs good management. I think he needs to be, you know, set down and told, we're not starting you, this is the reason why we're not starting you, and this is what we want you to do when you come on. Now, I think it's very difficult for me. For the last 2 years, I was given this role of coming on and trying to make an impact and all that. And I would agree with you, Colin, that you're sitting beside lads in the sub bench and you're disappointed not to be starting, and you're sitting beside a guy that's comes across nearly like a supporter, roaring on decisions and roaring like this, you know. But it's very, very difficult. If that's the role that they're going to use, for example, Patrick Horgan, he needs to readjust, and that will take time. You've become a starting player all your life to have been asked to play a sub role. It will take readjusting. And just going on Conal's point, that there is managers out there, and I agree with Conal saying a lot of managers goes, we'll finish with our stronger team, that we won't start our strongest team. Well, to me, that's a load of rubbish. You should be starting your strongest 15 in hurling circles, and you should be starting your strongest 15 and getting on top from the start, as in making out that you're putting in players to finish stronger. So yeah, that's just my own opinion.
Here's some audio from Ken McGrath, who obviously, like, in my experience watching hurling, he's the greatest centre back I've seen all action. But towards the end of his career, he lost a little bit of form, and when they won the Munster in 2008, wasn't it, lads, he actually didn't get a look in at all. He didn't even get on the field. So here he is talking about his experience being a sub.
No, I found it hard, and I honestly say hats off to lads that can do it. I remember at times in I missed the whole nine, I was injured, 2010, not getting a game, sitting on the sideline, probably watching hurling. That was, we weren't playing our best hurling. We won the Munster Championship, and the Munster final was poor the second day. So
yeah,
I was actually pulling my hair out on the sideline, mad to get on. And I would have loved to play them games against Cork under lights, something torless. And when I saw the team fighting so hard, I done nothing for that Munster Championship. I think I got 2 or 3 minutes in that Munster final replay, and I felt empty afterwards. And I think every player should feel the same. You should feel empty if you've only done 2 or 3 minutes. I didn't help the boys in 1% of them in that Munster final, you know. And I felt empty afterwards. I felt sad, I felt angry, and that's only natural, I think, you know.
Were you said in the book you were able to hide that, and on the outside you were trying to help lads in the dressing room, inside you were, it was killing you.
Yeah, hide it in training. That Munster final replay, I really found it hard to hide it, I'll be honest with you. Going into extra time and you're still not getting a run, and I remember in half time and extra time in the dressing room saying, I'm going off my actually head here. Like, I would do anything to help the boys out that night.
Isn't it weird that you're almost hoping somebody makes a mistake that you get the nod, when like then you're thinking, why would I think something
and
like
that's,
that?
That's only natural. Yeah. And I remember times that year saying, oh, I have to go on here now. I'd be grand out there, I'm wing back or wing or wherever I was going to be put. And but I think that's only being competitive, and that's only been what made me for most of my career. And if I was happy being a sub, what was the point, like, you know?
Yeah.
But I always trained hard, I always went in, I always tried to help the young lads, and that's the truth. And the lads will say that at times I didn't agree why I wasn't coming on, or I didn't agree why I didn't come on earlier, but it never stopped me from training hard and mixing in with the lads.
Yeah, you reacted badly when you came on against Clare, wasn't it? You scored the point and you started ranting at the sideline.
What
were you saying? Like, now, David.
Oh, look, I know what I was saying.
You know what you were saying.
I can't put it in the book, I can't put it here. But I remember being pulled in, I remember saying, oh, I was like a dog after the game. And I remember it was my first game of starting for Waterford. And I came on and I got a good score, and I remember going to train on Tuesday, and the boys wanted to have Borby in the middle of the pitch, and I was like, oh, right, what am I going to say here? And I kind of said, look, I think you're judging me on, say, the last year or two when I was injured. I think I'm going okay now. Judge me on now and not what your preconceived ideas are of me the last few years. And they said they would, and we kind of agreed that that won't happen again, just move on a bit now. But and I thought it did maybe for a Munster final, but the replay I didn't, as 2 or 3 minutes again, I got a bit of time in the first game.
In the first game, that was the thing. And another thing definitely jumped out at me, and I felt sympathy for you, was the replay or the drawn match. You came on, you thought you played well, and then you're pulled up in the video to say, here, look, those clearances, or you're not looking at where they're going or something, and that was your game all your life.
I remember I picked and hit a ball in front of the new stand in Thurles, and I hit it up, I think 70 or 80 yards, and that was what I was doing since I was 17.
Yeah.
And that was highlighted going to train on Tuesday. And I was happy with my performance. I thought I contributed something to the lads. I gave the ball in from Milan to get fouled for the goal the last minute. I won another free. I gave another pass up the sideline. And I was saying, I think I've done 5 decent things in the game. I was even counting them at that stage. You know, yourself, that's not right.
That was desperation.
That's desperation. Yeah, yeah. I remember saying, I was happy enough, and I kind of skipped in the training on Tuesday, and I was pulled over, and I went, ah, that's me done, you know.
You just knew the right
thing. I knew the right was on the wall for the replay anyway, yeah.
Yeah, Ken McGrath there, lads, and he's painting a pretty bleak picture. That was actually 2010. 2008, of course, was the year they lost the All-Ireland final to Kilkenny. But it's incredible hearing someone like Ken McGrath be so honest about his team, his county, winning a Munster title, and he's sitting on the bus and he is just thinking of how pissed off he is. You know, but like, I mean, there's not enough players, I don't think, admit that, because like what Damien says, you should love your county, you should want the best for them, but that's not how human nature always works, Conor.
No, like Ken was kind of probably the kind of player that was at the heart of Kilkenny, or sorry, the heart of Waterford. Everything they did good, it was all revolved around him. And I suppose it was very hard to adjust when Waterford actually do well without you. You're thinking, you know, well, what the hell is going on here? Like, you know, I should be in the middle of this. And it is hard to get enjoyment out of it, because it's nearly the same as, I think, when any top athlete, when you're playing in a team and they win and you don't play well, or you're not playing, you don't feel as if you've given, you know, enough to it. And you feel like, well, you know, I didn't really come on, or I didn't play well, so look, I'm not really enjoying this as much. And I think it happens with everyone, and it certainly happened with me many a time, where you win something and it's okay, it's great to win it, but if you don't play well or if you don't take part in it, you feel, ah, look, you know, I'm not really in the form here to go out and celebrate with everyone else.
Yeah. So is it in if players are being honest, is the number one reason for playing is to enjoy it and for yourself, rather than, oh, I play for my county and I play for the love of my county? You want, the number one reason I played was for me, because I really enjoyed it.
This
it
will come as a shock to a lot of people,
but it was something that I love doing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and if that's taken away from you and your county wins, my kind of, I don't know, it's the selfish part of me, my enjoyment of wanting to be involved in that over supersedes my county winning something.
Listening to our excellent rugby podcast, The Hard Yards, Paddy Wallace was talking about something like this. The Ireland rugby player after the Grand Slam win in 2009, it was him who gave away the penalty that Wales almost scored with in the last minute, which would have denied Ireland the Grand Slam. And he said he was walking around with it, like, with a face on him like a well slapped arse after the game in the banquet. He wasn't happy, because even though the penalty hadn't actually come to anything, he felt so bad about giving away that penalty that he actually couldn't celebrate and enjoy the greatest night of his rugby career from a team perspective. So professional, amateur, rugby, Gaelic football, hurling, yeah, everyone's the same, aren't they?
Yeah,
I think there's different dynamics in a squad. You know the team is picked for, say, a championship game, and it's 26, so there's some people that are, say, 26 to 33 that are happy to get into that, you know, that little area between the 15 and 26, and they're happy to be in there.
They're swerve jobs. You need to stay away. You need to stay away from those people.
Those are lads maybe that are like supporters.
Yeah, yeah, they're those lads. Yeah.
And then you have the other lads that are, you know, should be in the 15, and they're in that area between, you know, just on the edge of the subs. So they're really pissed off, you know, that they should be playing, and they're sitting on the bench, you know, nearly hoping that something goes wrong or someone gets injured, that I get in, I can do my best. So it is very hard to. But it comes down to management and communications, because so many times managers nearly just call out a team and you're not obviously on the 15 or you're not on the squad, and you're like, well, what the hell is going on here? And then you talk to someone else, and then, as we talked before, these whispers go around and, oh, he's a terrible manager, look, and you're waiting for him, and you're nearly, a little bit of you is nearly hoping that you lose because of the manager made the bad decision.
Yeah.
No, I should have been playing, or this should have been
to be vindicated set. And that's a horrible place to be at mentally as well, and then the whole guilt starts, you start feeling guilty about the way you're thinking, and should I, is everyone else think I'm the only one thinking this, I'm horrible. and it's just, it's a horrible dynamic. Now that we have Ken McGrath, some audio, because we're going to talk about Waterford and Cork and the brilliant rivalry that was between those two counties. They're playing at the weekend. But before we get into that, here's another little clip from Ken McGrath from that interview I did with him last year.
Well, Tom Waterford, and we're the weekend away, and we're playing a challenge game in some Dublin club, and his brother Rye was on the panel, and he found his hurdy. You'd like that. It was heavy antique, and that heavy antique at the time I would have used. Now, before Justin came in and he started kind of doctoring our hurdies a bit and getting them nice, and that's what I suppose helped us as well, you know. But before that, I'd use anything that was heavy and fairly thick.
So Ken McGrath is going to play a challenge game, and he plays the game with a hurl that was found in a skip because he felt it and it felt heavy, and once the hurl was heavy, Ken McGrath didn't really care. This goes against everything I've been led to believe about hurling, that you need to sleep with your hurl, you need to become at one with your hurl. Or was Ken just such a natural that he could actually pick up any kind of hurl? Is that normal, Conal?
I would say that most hurlers, you know, spend a lot of time picking out a hurl, picking out their weight, you know, even down to how it looks. It has to feel right, it has to look right, and if you're not happy with your hurl, so you won't be able to hurl right. I would have spent an awful lot of time at a younger age, you know, getting a hurl, sanding it down, making sure it's lovely, you know.
Really?
Even at a young lad, you know, you'd get the brand new O'Neills and it would make those lovely little marks in the boss of the hurl. You know, you'd want maybe a few of them to look like, you know, you can hit the ball left and right. If anyone picked up your hurl, you'd know.
You wouldn't even. Yeah. Okay, that's a classic.
You wouldn't even put your name on it big, you know. That would only just ruin the style of it. But then, you know, I remember particularly, we were coming up to the under-16 championship and I had five absolute beauts. And I sanded them down, spent the whole week doing it, and the five of them broke in the first half. I couldn't believe, because I sanded them so thin, I didn't even use them, you know. I said I'll use them for the game, and his first puck of the ball, it started cracking all over the place. So,
Right. But
near the end of my career, I did that. I was probably obsessed a lot of it with hurls, and you know what hurls to use, and everyone's saying, oh, the Duggins is best, or Brian Walsh is best, or Raimi Dowland is best. And I tried so many of them, but I suppose near the end of the career, I just didn't really care what I had. Once it was light, I just worked away with it, because I think the younger lads were getting so obsessed with it, you know, and the grip had to be the right colour. You know, you had to have a new grip on every train session or a new match or whatever.
And you'd be taping it up at home and having a nice grip on it. And then did you ever use the tennis, the kind of towel-y grip?
Oh, no, don't even get into that. Oh, no, that's embarrassing.
Damien, did you ever use the towel grip? Is that embarrassing in Galway as well?
I didn't use the towel grip, I'd
say. Didn't even use a grip.
Under 12, Colm. But, No, Lucas, you're on about hurls there. I'd say Ken McGrath was the type of lad, all right, that he could use any type of hurl and make it his own, make it a wand, because Ken was an absolutely savage player, so he was. And I was only watching Nate Cregale there the other night, and he was on it. And as you just said there, Colm, the honesty of his interview, you know, was admirable, you know. And sometimes I'd love if other J players that were given interviews after matches and before matches would be as honest and would tell the truth, because a lot of it is just their interviews are just going through the motions. Whereas on the hurls, yeah, I'll be honest, I used to always take fierce pride in my hurls. You know, I use a 33-inch hurl, right? So I had a small hurl. Everyone has their own preference. You'll get some lads that will want half inches, so they'll go to a 34.5 as opposed to a 35. And then every hurler in the country has their own little distinct style of boss. Some people like to have two pieces of tin put on. Some only like to have one. Some don't like tin. Like an awful lot of Wexford hurlers don't use tin on the hurls. I personally don't use tin on my hurls either. I don't see the reason for it. You'll have some players then that will be taking line balls, Colm, and taking long range frees that would drill a hole into the boss of their hurl and put lead into it.
Really?
Which people? Oh yeah,
to get under it.
Exactly. All it had been done. I remember a good friend of mine, Jar Farrer, used to put lead into his the bottom hurl, and he'd do on the sidelines. Often a goalkeeper would do the same. You know, so it is a very, very important point. You know, you're just saying there that Ken McGrath just took a hurl out of a skip and it was heavy, and he didn't find it. There used to be a great story about Joe Cooney that seeing him in some league match or league final that. He just rifles the match and he just walks straight over to the bag and he pulled out one hurl, never even looked, and just went out and got man the match. You know, so it's a similar story to Ken, but then again, there's two players, two elite hurlers, the two legends of the game. But yeah, the hurl is very, very important, Colm, the weight of the hurl, and all the top hurling makers in the country, right, Now, we'll just say, for example, Conal Keeney is getting a hurl made off a particular hurling maker, right? All the top ones will weigh that hurl, and they will keep what they call a sample of that pattern column, right? So when Conal Keeney has these two or three hurls broke during the year, he will make a phone call and go, I want to get two more of them same hurls. And your man will know the weight of them. He will know the weight that was on the boss. He will know the how much he sanded off it. And that's what happens with all these top, you know, because certain players in Dublin or certain players in Cork will be getting hurls 100 or 150 miles away, and they're hardly going to drive all the way down just to get two hurls. There seems up in Courier.
Yeah.
So that's just to explain how it's done with hurls, and you get grips and all the usual and drop down to by Courier, and sometimes you mightn't get the hurl at the perfect weight, but you'll get the hurl made for you, and then you'll just bring it to a sander, or you'll get your own sander and sand it down to the way you like it.
Yeah, there's loads in that. Is that lead thing legal, by the way? Because like, I wouldn't like that across the shins.
But sir, look, it's like should you be wearing a seatbelt when you're driving? Exactly. So it is being done. Has it ever been pulled on? No.
I love that. It's the fact, the lack of uniformity, I love it. I'm not sure about the lead in the boss of the hurl, though, but the fact that there is no standard size, standard shape, you know, as Damien says about the tin and all that. I was underage, I was a goalkeeper, and I swear to God, I had one goalkeeper's hurl, it was like a wooden tennis racket, the size of the boss on the thing. It was just ridiculous. I just said it to your man, I just said it to Hurley Maker, how big can you make it? He says, how big do you want it? I says, well, size of my head, maybe. He's like, yeah, no bother. And then I came back and I just had this, I was still a shit goalkeeper, and a big hurl.
It sounds to me like
just on a goalkeeper. I often wonder with goalkeepers, like, you know, as you were just saying there, Mikey, there's no rules and regulations to what length hurl you're allowed to use and what's the maximum length. I often wonder, like, how goalkeepers don't go and get a 42-inch hurl made for themselves. You know, so when there's a long range,
like a two iron,
you know, exactly, when the long range has been free being taken in, you can just throw the ordinary goal hurl into the back of the goal and put up this 42-inch one and just bat it out.
An extension.
Yeah, you could extend it on, like, you could get an extension like a snooker cue.
Extend it on, and like, who's going to say that? And the umpire is going to bring it to the referee's attention and go, he's after pulling out a longer goal hurl there. Yeah. I want to get him yellow carded, please.
That sounds like something the Cork hurlers might have been up to Donalogue there with the dodgy slitters that he did. But it sounds like a deeply personal thing, Conal. Like, I mean, there is a connection there for a lot of players, that this is my type of hurl. And you even mentioned, like, it'll obviously be sanded in the makers, but you'll sand it yourself maybe to make it that little bit more like the way you want it.
I think everyone has a bit of pride in it, you know. Always before a game, you'll go around and look at everyone else's hurl, and you know, you pick it up and you'll see, geez, that's nice, where'd you get that one?
Right.
You know, you'll be always trying to find out what's the latest thing, or someone else has come up with some idea. But just on that, I just thought of it. If you watch any that say, well, maybe not inter-county level to a degree, but a lot of club players, usually there's a good free taker, and that free taker will always have a good hurl. But if you watch his work rate and his blocking and hooking, it's never as high as anyone, because he doesn't want that hurl to break.
Right.
So he's always watching, and I know particularly very close to home, I won't even mention his name, but he'll pretend he's blocking, you know, or he'll turn the hurl on its edge to try and block, even though he's no chance of blocking well, but he doesn't want that hurl to break or crack, because that's his guaranteed hurl for his freeze.
That's a very interesting point, and I was going to ask you that, because I think it was Ryan O'Dwyer uses synthetic ones, and his idea with that is that if you have a hurl you love and it breaks, it might mess up your head a little bit, whereas the synthetic ones, you know, it's never going to break.
Well, I don't think it makes much difference to Ryan O'Dwyer what kind of a hurl he has.
He'll put his head in instead of the hurl.
No, but I can see his point.
Just on that column with the Cooltech hurls, right? I tried a Cooltech hurl there one time, right? It's completely different to an ash hurl, right? And it takes awful getting used to it and readjusting. And the best way to try to explain it to you on, you know, just over the phone is, if I hit a ball to you, Colin, just a low hard ball 100 yards, and you go to control it, right? A Cooltech hurl, when you're controlling it, the ball goes away from you.
It springs off.
Right? Now, it springs off. That's the best way, yeah. But for, you'd see an awful lot of goalies, well, you used to over the years, using the Cooltech hurl, taking puck outs, because you would gain that extra 10 yards on a strike, because it leaves the boss of the hurl and it just springs off it. you know. But not, I know Ryan uses that them Coolteck hurdles, but there isn't an awful lot of inter-county hurdles use them, and they're a nice weight and all that, but the ball springs off. I don't know, do you ever use one, Conan? But I used one in a training session, and I just hated it. It wasn't a nice feeling at all.
Yeah, no, I remember when Ryan first came up with those hurdles. It is very hard to get used to the touch, and it's very hard to get the sweet spot on it. You know, it takes a long, long time to get used to it. Now, it's easier for a goalie because you're standing in position, but when you're on the run, left and right, you know, trying to find that sweet spot on the Coolteck is really difficult, and it takes a long time. And maybe Ryan hasn't found that sweet spot yet, but it is really difficult to master, and it's probably a skill in itself to get used to them hurls. And
yeah, are all young under sixes, under eights, are they all being trained at an early age on these synthetic ones? Because, like, I mean, isn't the ash tree
dying?
No, they're not.
No, not that I know.
No, it's down our, I don't know about up your direction. I know it's a more posh direction. You're in Cornwall and the lad, but down our way, it's still all ash hurls.
You keep putting the lead in them down there, is it?
Yeah, well, sure. Anton to help.
This lead thing is great. Like, that was an absolute education for me.
They used to drill a hole in the toe end of the boss, and they would melt the lead. And they would put it in where you drill the hole, and it was. And I tell you, I've seen it. You're striking a ball, it would go 10, 15 yards longer, no problem. But now, it would make the Boster hole extremely heavy, Colin. But yeah, it is done.
Yeah, right. That's great stuff. We'll have to keep our eye out for some of those things, lads. I want to talk about, because, like, I mean, there's only 9 teams in hurling, and we talk about them all. We're talking about them all year. So I want to just talk about Waterford and Cork, and they're playing at the weekend. But I want to talk about them in the context of the incredible rivalry that they had. Pretty much starting from 2001 or 2 right up until 2008, and in that time Cork won 2 All-Irelands and Waterford won none, but they actually drew 4 all in head-to-heads, which is really interesting. Here's Ken McGrath again. He's like the Ken McGrath show, just talking about that rivalry.
2004 to me, to beat Cork in a Munster final in a packed stadium. The father played in Munster finals, got hammered by 30 points. So
and he down a man too.
Down a man, played some of our best hurling in that second half. It was a game that's stand up in any game now or any year, I think. And that was unbelievable match. And it was a game you actually enjoy. You know, games you're playing in big games and you don't feel like it's a big game. There's just, you're playing away legs out the back yard. And that was a game that was like that for me. And I loved it. Loved every minute of it.
Yeah. You did get well fired up on the field though. You know, that was part of what made you a great player. You'd caught a ball, you had the game won, you knew this was it, you know, when you poked it down it was going to be the game over. And yeah, Sully said something to you, the Rock, as he was running past you, and what the hell did you say? Great catch, Ken.
Yeah, look, aggression was a part of my game. When I lost aggression when I got older, I wasn't half the player, in all fairness. But at the time, I remember there's massive crowds, your adrenaline is pumping, and I caught that ball and I thought Sully wanted to say something, and I went back at him. He just said, great catch, and I said thanks. And out of great respect for Sully, I hope he'd be the same for me. We were playing minor and that underage growing up and stuff, you know, and that's a part of it. And I think that was a part of the game definitely back in the 2000s, you know.
You see, there was a lot of mutual respect between that Cork team and your team. Like, I think you broke even 4 all around that
kind of,
you know.
But they have 2 all there. Yeah, some of them have 3.
That's the killing part about it, I suppose, for you, that you were able to match them in some huge games, but when it came down to all Ireland semi-finals, there was some sort of a block.
Yeah, like, that's the killer, and that's what maybe you'd sit back and look back at your career and say, geez, how did we actually do that? Massive games of Cork, and yet they won 2 in a row in 04 and 05, and some of them won 99 as well, and we're left kind of scratching ourselves saying, we haven't even won to our name, you know. But as I said to you, there's no point in, if I look back, I'm worried about that the whole time. Never even go to work.
Yeah, lads, the one game that stands out for me in that 2000, in that rivalry, in that era, is the 2004 final. Like, I mean, Munster final. If you talk about the greatest game that has ever been played in hurling, that has to be up there in the top 5. Like, I mean, it had absolutely everything, Conal.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was one of those Munster finals that you always kind of remember. And I was just jotting down a couple of things this morning when you know, without having to watch the DVD of it. You know, when I think of a Munster final, you always think of a baking hot day.
Yeah.
And especially on that day, I remember, obviously, you remember the goals primarily more than that, and you remember the first couple of minutes that O'Cork got a fluky goal. I think the ball went through the Waterford keeper's legs.
Did you?
In the second minute, really early.
Yeah, and that started off. And then on the other side, you had Owen Kelly running down the side, right into the corner in Semple Stadium, and then right up by the end line, and then just drilled into the corner of the net. And then I think what happened, what nearly started all that off was like, Waterford nearly started off all this celebrating after scores. You know, all the time they got a score. Milan was probably the heart of it. You know, he'd be fist pumping the crowd.
Do you know
every
when Milan
minutes.
Started that? Milan started that. It was the game against Clare in the Championship. Remember, Damien, after you beat them in the league final, they were written off and they were slated. And then they came out and hammered Clare. Milan started that day and went to town and to celebrate. And that kicked the whole thing off. But, like, one thing. Go on, Damien.
Yeah, basically, we played Waterford in the league final 2004, and we beat Waterford down the Gaelic grounds in Limerick. And the journalists and everything started getting on to Justin McCarthy about his decision making. And Owen McGrath was put back corner back the same day on me, and he was corner forward all year, right? And basically, they questioned his decision making and questioned his desire of these Waterford players. And the media were after driving, you know, really motivating the Waterford players. The next thing, when the Waterford boys went out against Clare in that Championship match, they were just absolutely driven. They were just gone mad. And as you said, Milan was scoring points and he was pump fisting the crowd and he was just getting the boys going. And as you said, that was the start of it. But it was the journalists and the media really had driven the Waterford players and the Waterford management cracked, and that's where it all came from.
Sure, they should have won a year before as well, 2003 final. They kind of they looked at, if they hadn't won 2004, the Waterford players would have never forgotten about 2003 final, because they had Cork on the rack and they conceded a couple of goals. I think Satanto Halpine scored a very memorable goal and all that, but like
that was the Milan three goals and the fingers to the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. And but then the 2004 final was all just ramped up, as Damien says, the media, everything else. I was watching a documentary this morning, and it was Ken McGrath and Owen Kelly talking about going to see Waterford United in Cork City like a week before the final, and all the Cork City fans spotted the lads, because I think it was Ken McGrath was wearing a big Waterford GA coat on him, and the Cork City fans started chatting, "Sully's gonna get you, Sully's gonna..." So it was just ramped up. Even League of Ireland fans were getting into it, so you knew it was serious.
Yeah, but that, even that anecdote that Ken told there in the audio was of him clearing down a ball. It was the last, pretty much the last puck of the game, and Sully said something to him passing by, and McGrath runs after him. "What did you say?" Because McGrath had just scored an inspirational point just before that, and Sully was running past him, and McGrath thought he was like, was real hyped up, and Sully went, "Great score." You know what I mean? That was the, like, Sully's knows that pretty much at that stage he's going to lose the Munster final, a classic, and that's still a level of respect between the two teams.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And I suppose Ken McGrath was looking for some kind of something to kind of grab onto, to give him a dunt, you know, because at that stage of the game, when things are going well for you, and I remember that score, he scored it from well inside his own half, you know, and you're just waiting for somebody to say something, and you're looking nearly to hit someone, because that's the best time to hit someone, when you're after doing something well or getting a good score.
You won't get sent off then. but that was because, like, in fairness, I think Waterford were most people's, like, I was obsessed with them, and I loved the way they didn't wear helmets. All their best players, like Ken McGrath didn't wear one, Milan didn't wear one, Owen Kelly didn't wear one.
Toothless heroes.
They were toothless heroes. Dan Shanahan didn't wear
Waterford
one.
The Waterford team were the most idolised team at the time. They didn't wear helmets, Colm. They had tattoos. They were wearing bicycle shorts. They had white boots. They had blue boots. They were putting bands on around their wrists. They were writing on their wrists. As I said, they had bad haircuts. They had absolutely everything. And everyone just loved the whole, you know, to get a score and the fist pump to the crowd and the tattoos and did a whole lot. They were, everyone loved the Waterford hurling team, and everyone wanted Waterford to win in All-Ireland. It didn't win, and they had such brilliant players. And household names, and still household names, that everyone would have loved to have won. But when I was young, I used to love watching that Waterford team playing, and the way they used to, the freestyle hurling, and Justin McCarthy added an awful lot to the way they hurled. But yeah, Waterford were a joy to watch.
Is that, and like, were you able to think that they were great, even though you would have been like, you started in 2001, so like, would you have been a big fan of theirs despite the fact that they would be rivals of yours?
Absolutely. Even though you, for example, like at the 2004 league final, you played against them, you competed, and we were going, trying to win a National Hurling League medal, and which was fierce important, and I have two of them, and delighted to have two of them, you know. But like, the following day then, you were watching them against Clare, and next thing, the passion and the performance they put in, like, you know, you're a player, but you're still a supporter watching the game that you love, and you'd be admiring them, you know. So to answer the question, as you would, yeah, and like, you'd have respect for so many of the players. Like, we're speaking here about Kim McGrath, like, you know, Like, I remember that 2004, and as I said, I just watched his documentary on Laker Gale the other day, and he caught a ball. He cleared the ball at the very end of the game, and he said he topped it. And Neil, one of the Cork lads caught the ball in it, and he drove it straight back down the field. And he said in the clip that he had to get back into the middle, and he was afraid that he'd lose this ball, which would equalise the game for Cork. And he caught the ball over Jermaine O'Sullivan's head and won a free. I don't know if you can remember that, but it was just brilliant hurlers to watch. Just mighty. It was huge entertainment.
Yeah, it was. And I forgot to mention even Tony Brown there for not wearing helmets. He was another one. But the Paul Flynn goal, Conal, like, I mean, to go for a goal from there, like, he'd no right going for it. It was Dermot O'Sullivan on the goal line with the goalkeeper, with Don Logue, and he's not expecting this. Like, he's just in there, just put one man on. But you're not. I know Flynn was known for it, but it was a little bit further out than you'd expect to even think about a goal.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to know whether he actually really meant or not. I'd be very surprised if he actually went for a goal from that
really?
Distance. It was out around nearly the 45. Like,
I think, hasn't he claimed, and I'll stand to be correct, I think he's claimed it was one of those kind of aim for the crossbar and see what happens kind of jobby, over or under. But I think he definitely was half in his head, but I'm not sure if he was fully committed to it.
No, and I wouldn't be blaming O'Sullivan on the line. You know, the fullback and the full forward, if you watch it again, they were the ones that really contested for it. And, you know, maybe you could give the credit to that. I don't know who the Waterford forward was at the time.
Prendergast,
but
I think.
He let the ball go through.
Prendergast.
Let the ball go through. And it's not very often, like, from 45 yards out, you're expecting the ball to come in and you're on the line. You know, maybe O'Sullivan was probably getting ready for the puck out. He was expecting it to go over the bar. But, look, I don't know if he really meant it. But, yeah, probably crossbar and hope for the best.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, but isn't it a weird stat that those teams were so evenly matched and they drew 4-4 in that period of maybe 4 or 5 years, Damien. Waterford have no All-Ireland, Cork have 2. Like, what is it about traditional counties that are able to get it over the line there, and the likes of the Galways and the Waterfords, despite having great teams, you know, it's just they can't seem to do it.
The big problem is, Colm, and I agree, it was 4-4 in the draws, but you need to win one to get that monkey off the back. Right, and if they could only just win one, if they could win one, you could see them going on winning 2 and 3. And like, I just go back to my own playing days with Portumna. Right, we had competed in so many county quarterfinals and county semifinals back home in the Galway Championship, and in 2003, we finally just made the breakthrough. And once we won that one county championship, the monkey was off the back, and we went on and won 6 of them.
Right,
you know, so. It's a case that, you know, Waterford, they got to an All-Ireland final under David Fitzgerald, and they got the hiding of their life, so that it is against Kilkenny, that they'll never forget. Even Ken McGrath said he wasn't the same after. He wasn't the same as a person and as a hurler,
no.
He said, for Waterford after that game. That's what he said. And he said it really, really hurt him. And, you know, he thought that this, getting to an All-Ireland final, that this was going to be the game that was going to be the day of the greatest hurling day of his dreams. But it turned out to be absolutely the greatest hammering. The same day, they gave Man of the Match trophy to Brian Cody, because he got the team so right, and so they couldn't give a Man of the Match to a Kilkenny player, so they gave it to Brian Cody. Yeah. So, but it's a case, they just never won one. And if they won one, they could have went on and won a couple of them, but they just kept falling in the semi-final, whether it was just a mental thing or what, I don't know, but it just didn't work out for them.
I think it's partly down to what we're talking about, this the rivalry with Cork. I think it took so much out of them. It was almost the Munster final, the Munster semi-final, wherever they met Cork, that was the be-all and end-all of their seasons, for right or wrong. You know, they would be so hyped up for that, you know, everything after that would be a little bit of an anti-climax. And you just look at, like, the rivalries, you know, like the likes of Rock against Dan Shanahan, or Paul Flynn and Owen Kelly and Tony Brown and Joe Dean. These guys, like, they're absolute warriors. Like, you wouldn't be surprised if they came through that, you know, a Munster final in Semple Stadium, and they weren't quite ready for Offaly or Wexford or Kilkenny or whoever it was that was waiting for him in a semi-final.
Yeah, but if you look at the other side, like, remember Clare in 95, you know, they got hidings after hidings before they made the breakthrough, and there was rivalry between them and Limerick, between them and Tip, and, like, they hated everyone, but they were able to harness it right when it got to the semi-final and final, and, and they did it twice, you know.
Yeah, and you look like Cork won it after this epic match, like, so they got over the dejection and you know, the disappointment of losing that Munster final to win the All-Ireland. But I honestly think tradition counts for so much. It's actually gas. We're talking for about 13 minutes here. We haven't mentioned Cork once. Because, like, I mean, everybody loved Waterford. But, like, I mean, that Cork half-back line, like Gardner, Curran and Halpine, like, I mean, that's sensational. And one player, I want to get your thoughts on him here, is Timmy McCarthy. Always made the team, always gave 110% and always got slated. He always got a hard deal. But I really liked watching Timmy McCarthy playing.
He was probably a team player more than a big flashy player. Yeah. You know, he did an awful lot of donkey work that wouldn't really be seen unless you probably really knew the game. You know, he was involved in every ruck that was going on. He was putting his hand up. He, you know, and he was always laying the ball off to the better lads. Maybe
yeah, no ego at all.
Yeah, it seemed to be the way. And you know, a real player's player.
Damien, why is the love not there for Cork?
I think a lot of people are sick of Cork at times. You know, as in, if you're asking why is the love, is the love between Waterford and Cork, people always just pick Waterford because they just had class. You know, just the whole name thing. But as yeah. I said before, the Cork team need to up it big time. So to do the lot of their marquee players sometimes go hiding, as we know, and. They're having a disappointing league campaign. I know they have a couple of youngsters and they're giving them a chance and all that, but I said to you before, Colin, it's their marquee players, their big name players are the ones that have to drive on the whole thing. The younger players, like, they'll play well if the older, experienced players play well, and I think there's more out of that Cork team, but they're just not getting the performances in this year.
There's actually a huge contrast between the Cork team now and the Cork team back then, because I mentioned that half-back line.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
You had Gerry O'Connor and you had Ben O'Connor. Incredibly brilliant, likeable players. Joe Dean was incredibly likeable.
And incredible athletes.
Yeah, and DeRocco Sullivan, you know? Incredibly likeable, like a legend of the game. It's just wondering why that Cork team isn't looked back on as fondly. And one or two stories I heard about them is when they go on the All-Star trips, they kind of stuck together and there was a very clannish element with them. And, you know, maybe they had the conflict with the county board. Now I'd be on their side on that, but there was a whole you look back at that Cork team and I'm looking at it and I love most of the players and it's like you don't look back on it like they were always the enemy. Maybe it was just the love of Waterford overruled it.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot of love for Waterford, I think, but individually the players there and probably the players themselves, I think everyone kind of nearly loved and loved the way they hurled and loved their attitude toward it, but a lot of it is probably nearly down to a lot of the supporters think they're the best thing ever. They're nearly as bad as the Tipperary supporters, like, but you get sick of hearing this, you know, we're the real capital and all this, you know, we're the rebels. It just nearly grates people up the wrong way a lot of times, you know, and they think they're better than they are. Mm-hmm. They're probably living off past glories of you know, Jimmy Barry Murphy's and so on.
But Donal Logan, these lads played up to that a bit, didn't they? We are Cork. I remember him saying that. Was there a story that he was saying it in the parade as they were going around before some big game? You just hear Donal Logan, we are Cork. You know, and he's playing up to that arrogance that Cork had.
Yeah, they certainly do have a bit of arrogance. Like, but I think that's why teams nearly love playing them and love beating them, because they're not the team that they used to be back in the 80s and the 70s and the early 90s. But I think it's nothing to do with the players themselves. I think the players themselves or everyone would individually, you know, have no problems.
Isn't there an issue as well with maybe the style of play, to an extent? It had the kind of the Newtown Shandrum style of short pass and kind of systematic a little bit, you know, kind of a forerunner to Clare and Waterford now. Whereas Waterford were probably seen as the purists, like, you know, the, as we say, these toothless maniacs running around with lead in the boss of their hurls and their
really warrior stuff, though, isn't it? Like, it was almost primitive, like, with the no teeth and
scientific.
Blood streaming down Kemagrath's face and he'd no teeth.
Also, Colin, remember when Justin McCarthy took over that team, he completely brought the training sessions to almost 100% hurling, and he improved their hurling immensely. And you can see it over the years. Yeah, they used to hit roof one ball, but their hurling was as crisp and as sharp, you know, and the first touches were absolutely brilliant. And Cork did play a short game and all that, but Waterford hurling had improved immensely under Justin McCarthy. He brought it to another level. I read a book on Justin McCarthy. The book was called Hooked, and he speaks about bringing players to wall balls, and he compares the fairway of the golfer to the wall balls to the hurler. It doesn't lie. So he brought it to another level, you know, and that's why their hurling was so good and so crisp as well.
Yeah, okay, that's great stuff, lads. We might leave it there. Up next, we're going to talk to Shane Dowling.
It is tough. it won't tell you, there's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough, I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else, it's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday, it said 6 years, obviously the Leash men, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was through the morning, my nephew was out in the lawn and he was faking freeze with his socks pulled up pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Yeah, we've got Shane Dowling on the line now. Shane, I saw a headline there early on this week. Shane Dowling is back in full training with the Limerick Senior Hurlers, so welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. Eagerly waiting now. It's like a rough January. I suppose the only way I'm looking at it is that my body was telling me to stop and slow down a bit. I've a lot done and I just got hit with a bad virus and couldn't get rid of it. I've 2 games played at the club now and I've 2 or 3 weeks training under my belt, so hopefully might see a bit of action against your own boys there Saturday night.
Yeah, I know, it's a bad time for you to be back into action for me. So do you think the illness or the virus you picked up was as a result of being fatigued from training, or?
I've no idea. I have to tell myself something, so that's what I'm telling myself. I'm trying to stay positive. The way I look at things is everything happens for a reason. And if I had to put a reason on this happening, it was just kind of needed to take a bit of time out. I've a lot done, and obviously training is tough or whatever. Some people might call me soft taking off January, which is obviously one of the highest workloads of the year. But it was what it was. I struggled, but I'm back in and ready to go now again, thankfully.
Yeah, it must be very frustrating that happening when you have a new manager, you know, John Kiely, and you want to, no matter who it is, you want to impress the new manager, and you haven't had a chance to do that really yet.
Yeah, you're dead right. I suppose John and his, well, I've worked with John before now, to be fair, but him and his team, I suppose they wouldn't really know, am I a bluffer or am I a hard worker? At this time of year, you know, they've only worked with me for a short period, so I suppose I'm so grateful and thankful that John and the lads, and he enlisted, there's nothing more he could be but understanding, because you know, we obviously back training there maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and I had a lot of work done, a lot of hard work done, and all of a sudden this thing came on, and you know, there was nothing anyone could do, only sit back. And I know the Wexford game and John's first year and with Davey involved, and that was a massive game, and no one more so than me was disgusted to be missing it, but listen, it was what it was, and if we can have a good championship, not too many people will remember what happened in February.
Yeah, which I was going to ask you about that game, how much of a setback that was, because I was reading like there was 10 debutants, so then I was wondering how much stock Limerick were actually putting on that game.
Yeah, again, I was missing for the previous 3 weeks, so it's hard for me to. All I can tell you is that, you know, Limerick obviously went down to Wexford Park with one thing only, that was to win the game. I suppose there was a massive breeze. I was watching the stand, myself and Downs were above in the stand watching it, and, you know, there was a huge breeze, and we probably didn't get enough of a lead early on. But, you know, people were saying to me, they know us, that we only got that penalty, and if this and if that. And the reality is, if I don't know about all these ifs, because we've been fighting that division now for 7 years, so they can't all be referee's mistakes. No, in saying that, it was a penalty, it was clear for everyone to see, and you were 4 points up. If you score that, you're 7 points up and it's probably game over.
Yeah.
But I mean, you didn't get it, you were still 4 points up, you were still in the driving seat, and you know, we just didn't win for whatever reason. As you said there was a lot of positives to take out from it. There was a lot of young bodies in the field. You know, it's a massive game for them, and you know, obviously it was disappointing not to get the result, but in terms of a setback, I don't think there was any setback really, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember you telling me a few years ago on a different show on Satanta that it's not the end of the world being in Division 2, but you know, because you can bring a few lads on and you don't have to hit the ground running as hard as you would in Division 1. But now you're in Division 2 for 7 years, has your opinion on that changed a little bit?
It hasn't, I suppose. Listen, if you have all these debutants, we've an extremely young panel here in Limerick, right? And if you threw all them lads in to, we'll just say you got Tipperary and Thurles first game, and you threw in all these young fellas, and they're going in against an obviously Tipperary team that's obviously probably in their height for a long number of years. I mean, it can go 2 ways, like, you know what I mean? You can scare young hurlers,
yeah,
or they can breed off them. I just don't know what to fight off, to be honest. I mean, in Division 1B, like, there's Wexford and Galway, you're guaranteed 2 good teams. I mean, Offaly has always been a struggle for us for as long as we're in Division 2. And I'm not just saying it's not because Donati men were playing the weekend, but if you look back at the results in the last year or two, like, you know, Laois, and I know Galway, and I was actually surprised at that result the weekend, but they're definitely guaranteed three or four good games. Would you benefit more if you played the bigger counties? Absolutely, in terms of, in some respects. I know the treasurer of the county board would obviously love, you know, Division 1 teams coming down, you get bigger gates and bigger revenue and bigger crowds, and, you know, but it is what it is. And I mean, we've had good championships in the past coming out of 1B, and I'm hoping this year will be something similar.
Yeah, and Waterford and Clare have both won the league coming out of 1B in the last 2 years. So, like, I think too much stock. I think you're right. In, you see Roscommon with a young team in the football in Division 1 and their confidence is shot. You see Dublin getting hammered by Tipperary in Croke Park, the hurlers, with a young team because, yeah, you know, they're not ready for it. And there's a, I think there's a really strong argument that you're making for, especially with, at the age profile of your team now.
Well, there is. I mean, you look at, okay, Dublin turned the corner since, right? That's fine too. But what happens is if you play, just take Dublin for argument's sake, right? I mean, they got a right trim in that day, right? What can happen then is that you start doubting yourself, you start doubting the players, you start doubting everyone. You think, in a waste of time, are we good enough? And that can happen. Now, you know, it's a credit to Dublin the way they've come back. But even Roscommon, you know, they got well beat from Mayo, and I know they put up a bit of a show against Kerry the weekend, but I'm not convinced that it's all about Division 1A, because, I mean, if you're good enough, Colin, at the end of the day, right, you'll get to league quarter final if you're good enough to get out,
exactly,
of 1B or come second in 1B, and then you'll be tested fairly certain. And we got out of it. We are fair enough to finish second in division last year. We don't hurt it to stay Waterford, and we were well beaten. So, you know, you can see Limerick will know where to stand after they play Galway. You know, if you beat Galway, well, you're in a good place. You know, even a good competitive game against Galway and you have a good run into the championship, then I'm not all that convinced. Some people are, I'm not.
Right, okay, yeah, that's fair enough. I tend to agree with you on that. I saw John Kiley was saying after beating by Cork in the Munster League, the average age of the team is only 21.3 years of age. Like, that's an incredibly young panel. Like, I mean, you're 24 now. You're almost one of the leaders on the team now, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I genuinely feel like a pensioner in Sweden. You know, that's why I admire the likes of Michael Walsh and all these fellas, Kevin Moore. How they stay going is incredible. It's just the way the game has gone. In Limerick now, it's fairly small but eccentric. You know, we've had success with the 21 teams and the minor teams have all done well in the recent years, and they all have to be brought in and given a chance. But I mean, bar the oldest now, like Gavin O'Mahony and Tom Condon and Richie and the boys, they're all 28 and 29, and they're the oldest in the team. That's where, like, Wayne Mack was the oldest, now he's retired. So it's definitely a work in progress, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an incredible one. And, like, I mean, they got a rude awakening. You mentioned playing Tipperary in the league, but, like, they got an awful trimming. It was an experimental team against Cork's, conceded 7 goals. And I saw Kylie coming after the game talking about abuse being thrown in at the young lads from the supporters. And that's something you spoke about before, about messages you got and stuff like that. And I'm surprised to hear that's still going on in Limerick after, you know, you kind of went public with it.
Yeah, sure. Listen, Colin, when you're dead and I'm dead, it'll still be going on in Limerick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is what it is. And I won't lie, it got to me definitely my hair. Career, whatever it was, 3 or 4 years ago, and you know, and it was just, it built up inside me, and I'd imagine John probably got a bit of a shock, you know, one of his you know, first years involved and whatever. And I was there the same day. I wasn't sitting too far behind who it was, and it's definitely disappointing to hear, but it's just part of the culture in Limerick. And I suppose you have to look at it in two ways. You know, the people in Limerick are crying out for success and people are getting frustrated. But to be quite honest with you, know, if you were the person that was trying to abuse, you wouldn't look all that into it.
Right, so it's just a one person. Like, I mean, it wasn't, like, it's just the same kind of offender maybe all the time.
Yeah, listen, you have the usual culprit. But as I said, it's definitely, I think people are beginning to realise that, you know, it is a young side, it is a work in progress,
yeah,
at a given time. And eventually, I think that mindset is going, no, you'll only buy that as well for 2 or 3 years, you know what I mean? But we'll see what that 2 or 3 years brings.
Yeah, talk to us about the new management team, because it looks on paper it's really exciting. Like, I mean, Kinnerk is a Limerick man. I didn't actually know that until a few months ago, that I just associated him with Clare, but he's so highly rated. What changes has he brought in with you?
I suppose that he's very young, you know. He's I don't know what age he's only in his early 30s anyway. I know Paul for a good number of years. He was living with David Breen there for a while in Caerlevin, so I got to know him through him and whatever. And his intensity, his style, his, you know, just how much modern he brings to the setup. You know, he is really good. He's one of the top class coaches that are there. There's no point saying otherwise. Everyone can see what he's done with Clare. And the fact he's a Limerick man, born and bred, you know, he obviously wants to be involved in the Limerick team. He's been kind of rumoured to become Limerick for the last number of years now, but he's there now. And listen, I suppose from a player's point of view and everyone's point of view, everyone's run out of excuses now.
Yeah.
We've a young side of ability. We have a top class management team. I mean, I worked with John in 2013. He was a selector with John Allen when we won the Munster. He was a selector to 21s. In 2011, so I know John a long time. Everyone knows John. He's been coming through with everyone, and obviously everyone have massive respect for Brian Geary. You know what he done with Limerick, and Joe Connor is serious strength and condition, and Jimmy Quilty was a selector with John as well in 2011, and also Alan Cunningham in there, who I know very well, who trained us to win the All Ireland Club last year. So I mean, the ingredients are there now. It's just putting them together as a thing.
Yeah, would Paul Konerkina, the work he's doing with you, be much different? You don't have to give away his trade secrets, but would it be much different or far advanced to other coaching, or would you have had enough coaching before, and is he a pure coach?
So you look at Sean Stack now, who's with us, you know, in the peership, and I suppose who's the foundation to where we got. But his style would be so different to Paul's, like, you know what I mean? It's just different eras. Like, there's nothing wrong with either of them. It's just, you know, before, if you did a drill where one man is in the middle with Sean, you could be in there for two and a half minutes. You know, with Paul, it'd be 30, 35, 40 seconds, snappy. You know, it's all snappy nowadays, like, you know what I mean? And it's just the way things have gone. It's doing a lot more for a shorter period at a higher intensity. You know, that's where it is.
Right, okay. Because what I was wondering is, like, the Limerick's style traditionally would be a little bit like Kilkenny, maybe, you know, hard-hitting, long ball kind of game. Whereas with Clare, they played a different kind of game. I was thinking maybe it was under his coaching. I'm wondering, maybe are you looking at maybe changing your style?
Are we looking at changing our style? Well, it all comes down to the teams you play, to be honest, Colin. If you're playing Clare in previous years or a Wexford, I mean, if they're going to have a spare man, if they're going to have a man sitting, then you've no choice but to, like, I don't call it sharp play, I call it clever play.
Yeah.
There's no point in our full back getting the ball and he launching 60 yards and looking great and the crowd roaring is going to land straight into a sweeper's hand. You know, the term sharp play, I think, is a small bit ridiculous. It's just got to be clever play. I mean, if you're playing at Kilkenny, if we play Kilkenny in the morning, traditional 15 and 15, by all means, it's hurling, it's all out the way the tradition in Limerick and Kilkenny was. But, I mean, if you're playing a team of a sweeper, you just have to box clever. It's the way it's gone. I think styles can be, you know, they can be overpowering at times. It just comes down to being very clever with the ball.
Yeah, it's actually gas. We played a lot of Ken McGrath audio in the show earlier on, and he was talking to me last year about when Davy Fitz took over Waterford and the game was starting to change, and him with his big clearances, with his back to goal, which the crowd used to love, and that was his game. Davy didn't want them anymore, and like, it kind of confused Ken, but that's the way it's gone now. These clearances that the crowd cheer for are a waste of time, like you say, because someone's just going to mop it up.
They are to a certain degree. You know, I suppose Limerick play well when it's played the Limerick way and the crowd are involved and, you know, the sea green is there. That's when Limerick always play their best. And I'm not sure there's too many teams in the country fancy playing Limerick when, you know, there's a big crowd there and the sea green is there and the crowd are vocal and, you know, you're playing your the intensity that we can get to. But we haven't got to that intensity in the last couple of years, and when you don't get to that intensity, the crowd don't get involved and you become an easier team to beat, and that's been what's happening. So we just got to get back to what we do best. It takes a lot of work because, you know, there's a lot of fitness involved and there's a lot of things. If we can get back to that, though, you know, I think we could mean business at some stage.
Yeah, a bit of experimenting as well. Declan Hannan's gone back to centre half back. I haven't seen him play there yet. How's that working out? That's a surprise to me. Is it a surprise to people in Limerick?
No, definitely not. When we play in Harty Cups and that in school, Declan was probably the best centre back in the country.
All right.
And I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that. You know, and he was tried there, it was a year or two ago, but he was kind of tried for the while for Crystal and that was the end of it. But he's been playing there now for the last number of months, and he's really hurting well there, which I'm delighted for too.
Is this a re-energised squad? Like, I mean, is the sky the limit? How good are these young fellas coming through?
She won't know until the championship comes. That's the reality of it. You won't know playing Wexford in February on a windy day, or you won't know playing Leash on a Saturday night at the start of March. You know what I mean? You'll get an idea. But the real test comes when we play Clare in June. You will then find out what you have and what you don't have. And that's the reality of it. It's not a short answer. Until you throw a young fella into the mix, in the heart of championship, in the middle of battle, you'll see then what they have to produce.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Go easy on Leash at the weekend, will you?
Well, I think now people in Limerick were hearing the same about that, find out what happened. So I can't say that'll be the case, Cullen, please God.
Okay, listen. Well, listen. Best of luck for the year. I'm sure we might be back on to you during the championship.
Please God, so man. Thanks, Cullen. After the match with with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was.
Hang on. Did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't. But I was only a special guest. That Thursday, you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yesterday on the Marty squad that yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad jokes on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily. Yeah. He hits it!
It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads, right? We have a serious show to do here, right?
Yeah, lads, accumulator's time. Mikey, I'm going to go to you first. You're the man with the phone out there and the bookies odds.
The man who does not gamble has the bookies odds out here, yeah. Okay, I'm going to start my own county, Offaly v Wexford. Offaly are plus 6, 11-10. I think that's a pretty good bet. They did well the last day out. And Wexford did the job against Kerry in the end, but... You know, as we always say, well, Tullamore is one of those hard places to go to.
We actually backed against Wexford in the handicap against Kerry, and we ended up with egg on our faces. But
I know, but
that's not going to deter you. Let's go against your county for 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I'm nothing if not determined and treacherous.
Offaly plus 6. What else?
Galway minus 19. I just think Galway have got the anger up now. They're heading down to Kerry. I think they could put a beating on Kerry there.
Okay, and your third one. We'll go 3 because these are hard to get up with these wonky handicaps.
Clare v Dublin, Clare minus 3.
Clare minus 3 v Dublin.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got faith in Clare.
Okay, and that's about even money as well.
5-6, yeah.
Okay, so Offaly plus 6, Galway minus 19 and Clare minus 3. They're Mikey's picks. Conal, go to you.
Right. I think Tipperary will beat Kilkenny.
What's the odds on that, by the way, Mikey? Tipping Kilkenny, are they close or are Tipperary strong favourites?
Tipperary 4-9, Kilkenny 2-1.
Kilkenny 2-1.
Hmm.
Still, it's in Tipperary.
Yeah, no, it's in Tipperary. I think Tipperary will beat them by more than 3.
What's the handicap in it, Mikey?
3.
3. There you go. Okay. Tipperary minus 3. That's probably even.
Evens.
Money. Right.
I'll go for the same one you went for, the Offaly plus 6.
Offaly plus 6.
So it's only 3 this week, isn't it?
Yeah, 3's enough when we're going near the even monies on these handicaps.
And I think Waterford will beat Cork by more than 6 points.
Well, the handicap's 4, so you're alright then.
Yeah.
Okay, Waterford minus 4. Okay, that's interesting. Tipperary minus 3, Offaly plus 3, and Waterford minus 4 to beat Cork at home. Damien, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go with Tipperary. I'm going to go with Waterford, and I'll go with Galway.
Okay, Galway. Yeah, I love the way Damien doesn't entertain handicaps at all. He's just going straight old-fashioned wins. I don't think he fully understands the handicap thing.
I understand. I understand the Rory, Colin.
Right, okay, well, that's Damien. You probably put on a tenner to win a fiver with that accumulator there. I'm going to go with Offaly plus 6. I'm going to go Kildare to beat Carlow. I'm on a huge Kildare love-in since we interviewed John Mulhall. And I will go with the Clare minus 3. I think Dublin away. Dublin going to Clare might struggle. So that's Offaly plus 6. Clare minus 3. Actually, no, I'm just going to stick for it because this is just making really bad podcast podcast radio. Clare, Kildare, and Offaly plus six.
On that, I think you've done a decent job. I think we'll let you keep on after. It's not as good as Monday,
much.
But we're going to let you stay
much.
On. But do you have to tell us how you're getting on in your, you know, at home?
It's good. Look,
the little fella.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. First two nights were difficult enough. Not too much sleep got, but I think it's not that bad at all.
Oh, you've turned a corner now after
turned a
6
corner,
days.
Turned a, I think there's a lot of drama made about
overrated.
This. It's over. Like, yeah. I mean, it's not that hard. It's like the same fellas whinging about hard training sessions. Like, they're always going to be whingers. I'd like to go do a hard training session and come home and say, that was good. That was a good session. It's hard. It's rewarding. And it's that's all I have to say on it. I don't think anyone's listening by now anyway, because everybody tunes out for the accumulator section because we've made no money whatsoever. Right, listen, that's all we have time for this week. We'll see you back on Monday with a review show. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later, but not a lot of talk.